Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Living a Richer Life, life-changing talk radio, a place where like-minded people from across the country come to listen, share, and learn from topics that deal with their health, wealth, hope, and prosperity. You can participate by sharing your comments or questions from the Richer Life blog page or chat room at www.blogtalkradio.com/richerlife or by using the phone to call in. Let's join the show.
I'm Dr. Charlotte Grant Cobb.
And I'm Earl Cobb.
Welcome to Life Changing Talk Radio and episode number 7 of the Situations and Leadership Broadcast. As you know, this is a special broadcast series which gives us all an opportunity to spend a few minutes to discuss and learn from a chapter of the new book, Situations and Leadership, Short Stories and Lifelong Lessons.
The goal of this podcast series is to have an entertaining and hopefully insightful discussion about each of the 10 short stories. Each of the short stories are written to unpack some key lessons all of us can learn and use while addressing challenging personal and professional situations. These lessons can also strengthen our critical thinking and leadership skills. As with each of the broadcasts in this 10-part series, Charlotte and I are honored to have two guest hosts, and tonight is no exception. They have both read the book and are here tonight to share their thoughts on the story and the lessons contained in Chapter 7, titled Now It Makes Sense. First, I would like to welcome to tonight's show Tracy Cricket Crockett. Cricket, as she is affectionately called, is known as a dynamic leader, a best-selling author, a speaker, a storyteller, who now partners with women to help them dig deep, find clarity, and reignite a renewed purpose in life. From starting her career as a first-grade teacher of underprivileged students in Columbus, Georgia, to becoming a senior executive director of a faith-based company with over $1 million of annual sales, Cricket has transitioned into a powerhouse direct sales leader, a certified life and leadership coach, and a best-selling author. She graduated cum laude from Auburn University and is a mentor with MOPS International, which is a ministry dedicated to gathering and supporting moms around the world. By the way, MOPS is an acronym which stands for Mothers of Preschoolers. Cricket understands how a busy lifestyle and high achievement can have the potential of burnout, and she uses her passion to share a message of self-compassion, self-help, and mental health to women while coaching and speaking at retreats and large conferences. Cricket, we are so glad to have you with us tonight. Welcome to Life Changing Talk Radio.
Oh, thank you so much for having me, Earl and Charlotte. I am so glad to be a part of the discussion. You know, I found myself in various leadership roles throughout my lifetime, so I'm thrilled to be a part of this conversation. Thank you so much again for having me.
Well, we're glad you're here. Also, let's welcome to episode 7 of Situations and Leadership a dear friend and someone that Charlotte and I have known and admired for many years, starting back during our early days in Phoenix and at Arizona State University, Veda O'Manager. Veda is currently the founder and CEO of Manager Global Holdings, LLC, a principal and board member of Think True, which is a multicultural marketing agency. Now, Manager Global Holdings, LLC, serves as the coordinating company for various entrepreneurial enterprises, ranging from global corporate consulting to hotel and hospitality services. Veda has been a member of the corporate leadership team of some well-known Fortune 100 companies, including a 12-year stint at Nike, where he was the Senior Director of Global Issues Management, and the time he spent at Levi Strauss & Company, where he was a senior manager for executive communications. Veda has been elected to several corporate boards. He currently serves on the board of Valvoline, Inc., a $2.5 billion manufacturer and distributor of Valvoline brand automotive oil additives and lubricants. In 2020, the Directors and Boards magazine named Veda as one of its board of directors to watch, and Savoy magazine named him one of its most influential black corporate directors in 2016 and 2017. Veda is a graduate of Arizona State University, go Sun Devils, so are Charlotte and I, where he serves on as a trustee, a member of the President's Club, and was recently inducted in the school's Hall of Fame. Veda, it's so great to have you with us again. Welcome to Life Changing Talk Radio.
Well, thank you, Earl. Thank you, Charlotte. It has been a many decades of a fruitful relationship with you all, and reciprocally, I admire you all as well for the great body of work that you all have accumulated, both through Richard Life and all through your careers, and certainly a lot of that work has influenced my journey and path as well. As I tweeted earlier today in anticipation of the show, I kind of received one of my first leadership opportunities at age 21 when I was elected to the Board of Regents in Arizona. So I've been at this a while, and hopefully I'll have something to share with you and your audience tonight. Thanks.
I'm sure you will. Now, Veda's with us. You're in Phoenix tonight?
Correct.
Okay. Very good. Now, hopefully everyone in the listening audience has read the story in Chapter 7 and are ready to help us unpack some of the lessons it contains. And these are lessons that can enhance anyone's leadership and critical thinking skills.
Earl, I just also want to welcome Cricket and Veda, our dear friend, to the show tonight. And before we start the discussion, we'll first take a short break, then play a recorded synopsis of the story from Chapter 7 titled, Now It Makes Sense. We'll be right back.
You're listening to Living a Richer Life, Life-Changing Talk Radio, where like-minded people come to listen, share, and learn. The phone lines are now open. If you wish to join us on the air, you can call 516-418-5769. Again, that's 516-418-5769. Or you can join us on our blog page at blogtalkradio.com/richerlife. Email us at info@richerlifellc.com or tweet us at @richerlifetalk. Now here's a synopsis of tonight's story and situation.
Now this makes sense. Celestina's mother was 6 feet tall. Her father was 6 feet five. As an only child, she was gifted with her grandmother's height of only 5 feet four. However, today she finds herself sitting on a stage, waiting to hear her name called and to take the oath to become the first female chief of police of a major U.S. metropolitan city. In her response to the question, "How did you get here?" she shares an insightful chronological breakdown of the stops along the way and the leadership growth that was required for her to pull it off. In the end, it was something that her father told her years earlier about being a leader that was a major factor in her life's success and for her earning the opportunity to be selected as chief of police.
And welcome back. Let me remind our callers that if you would like to share your thoughts on the situation found in Chapter 7 or have any comments, please push 1 on your phone. That way we can recognize you, bring you into our screen room, and then bring you into the live discussion. You can also engage with us via our chat room, on our blog page, email us at info@richerlifellc.com, or tweet us at @richerlifetalk. Now, Earl will lead our guest panel in a review of the story contained in Chapter 7 of Situations in Leadership and respond to as many of the questions at the end of the chapter as possible, as well as any questions or comments we get from you, our listening audience.
Well, thanks, Charlotte. Now, this is one of my favorite chapters and favorite stories. And as you heard in the synopsis of tonight's story, the main character, Celestina Rodriguez, finds herself on stage and ready to hear her name called. But getting there required her to navigate several very interesting, challenging situations over a number of years. So let's get started by asking both Cricket and Veda this question. How would you describe Celestina's approach to managing the situations that she encountered doing her quote-unquote career stops? Cricket, why don't you go first?
Sure, I'm happy to. Well, Celestina's approach was quite methodical. She created a career path and paralleled it to her leadership growth plan. It seemed like she didn't want to miss any opportunities to get to her goal. She remained flexible the entire time towards any situation or challenges that caused eventually a lateral or even a step back. But in the long run, she actually resulted to getting to her goal. Probably not the way she thought she might, but she still did. She managed her stops by identifying tasks and skills that she needed to master each step. And like I said, she achieved her ultimate goal in the long run. So it worked out well for her.
Very good. You know, the story really didn't share with us why Celestina, you know, of all the various disciplines and all the various things that you'd have to do in any job and to move through any progression, but for some reason she thought that the leadership part of her job would be key in this particular area. Now, Veda, how would you describe Celestina's most challenging situation?
Well, I would say what Cricket just indicated is correct. The methodical and the planning aspect, I think, is critical. I think one of the things we often realize in situations like this is that it is often not a straight line to the destination in which we hope to get to. It often sometimes, while we may plan and while we may think, it is often sometimes a series of pivots, and understanding where those kind of pivots take place and being able to navigate those pivots appropriately, I think can eventually still lead us to the eventual outcome, the kind of the point A to point B situation or the point A to point B destination in which you want to arrive. So the challenges I think that she faced were she was able to navigate accordingly. And I think particularly in a field such as leading police officers, one of the things I think it's really important to keep in mind, probably more so than the other field, you know, it's never really about the role, and you need to keep that in mind. It's always about reaching a certain goal. So I think once you kind of understand that and embrace that, you can navigate most or just about any challenging circumstances, such as the ones that she's encountered.
Right. You know, I would think, and of course I've never been in a situation that if I was, you know, headed to the police academy, even if my father had been, you know, a star policeman over his career, and if I was, what you say, smaller, 5'4", than most people, and not even to think about what it would be like to have to go through, you know, all of the training and the qualifications when most of the other people in your class are not female, okay, I would think most people would focus on that. You know, for example, when I see job descriptions, generally, therefore, managers or supervisors, nowhere in that description, maybe further down, they'll say something about leadership skills, but it's not hiring a leader. They feel they're hiring a manager, and the leadership part of it would take care of itself. But it was interesting that when her father told her earlier in her career that, remember that whatever you do, whatever job you have, whatever position you take, to do the best that you can in all of those jobs, because in reality, you'll find out is that success happens when you leave the room. So I thought she may not have recognized what he was saying, but somehow that resonated with her. I think one way, or a good way, that we can frame tonight's discussion to bring the audience in, hopefully they've read the story and they've got some good ideas as well, is to touch on Celestina's strategy at each stop as far as her leadership development, and how important was that, how relevant was that, and I'm very interested in hearing from Veda and Cricket. You know, I'm sure they've seen situations in their life similar, how they handled it, and how do you think Celestina handled it? So let's start with her promotion to lieutenant. Now, when she got promoted to lieutenant, she said her plans were, I need to do at least two things from a leadership standpoint. I need to build trust with each team member by having the courage to speak the truth to everybody. And then I need to demonstrate flexibility in terms of my behavior. So those were the two things that she indicated that she wanted to spend time making sure that she did. Now, Veda and Cricket, was this a good idea at this stop? And I know that both of you have had multiple career stops. And do you think that the approach she took as far as building trust was the right approach? And Veda, let's start with you first.
No, absolutely. I think in any circumstance, and in any sector, trust building and the ability to establish that level of rapport with direct reports and even with others within the department beyond those that are within your span of control is a crucial aspect to having others notice you. As we all know, in big corporations and in global corporations, there's done what's called HRP planning or human resource planning, and they take the top potential individuals, and you never know in many of those instances who's watching you and what projects you agree to accept. Many times people gravitate, I think, to the glamour projects in many instances, and sometimes it's not the glamour projects that help you to achieve those goals. It's sometimes the projects that nobody else wants or people default to, and actually it's a good thing if you're thinking about your career, because the bar to success, nobody may not expect you to succeed. So if you have success at a problem that everybody else thinks is intractable or other people have failed at or otherwise, then if you do succeed or have a modicum of success, that can catapult you relatively quickly up the corporate ladder or, in her case, the police department's ladder. So I have found that to be true in my career, particularly at Nike. Everybody wanted to do sports at Nike and spend time with Michael Jordan, spend time with Tiger Woods. I got the more difficult corporate assignments, but it was myself that ended up reporting to Phil Knight, the founder of the company, and spending the most time for him because I was helping him solve one of the more intractable problems. I'll stop with that.
Very good. Very good. Cricket, what about you? Do you think how Celestina handled it was appropriate? And what have you done doing some transitions in your career to build trust?
Sure. Yeah. I think I want to just piggyback on what Veda said because I agree with what he was saying. I think it's interesting that this is her first promotion, according to the story. And I love that her first goals that she lays out are building trust with courage to speak truth and flexibility, because I think those are sort of the first steps to building leadership skills within us. What I love about leadership is it doesn't matter what role you have and it doesn't matter what title you have. Anyone can be a leader. And she demonstrates that by her first promotion to lieutenant. She clearly has not reached her goal yet of chief, but she's on the beginning steps to build that rapport and that trust. And, you know, without that, transactions cannot occur. If she did not do that, she, I believe, would not have had the influence that she did over the team members, and others in the department wouldn't have noticed her. I think she says in the beginning of that portion of the chapter that one of her first goals was to be recognized for leadership and performance. And I think that that's an excellent way to start that journey. Trust and relationships are everything, but especially in the workplace. So, right. Yeah, I agree. And I think, you know, building a team myself and learning to lead and lead well, it does start with building that rapport and trust. And obviously as a coach, absolutely, you know, working with a client one-on-one, building rapport and letting the client know that they can be vulnerable and it's a safe place. And, you know, that's key. So, yeah, I absolutely agree that this is the right step at the right time in her career path.
And you know, it may sound easy to be the kind of person to be that insightful at the start of your career. You know, I remember my first major program manager's position or role when I was with Motorola, Government Electronics Group. And I had the opportunity to lead a group that consists of, because this was a manufacturing program, production people, all the way up to three-star, four-star generals who were involved in making sure that this piece of equipment, which was destined to be on the space station, was manufactured properly and manufactured on time. And as a relatively young program manager, you know, my focus was being able to make sure that I knew where everything was. I knew all the schedules. I knew where all the parts were. I knew what the schedule was going to be. So I'd spend my time whenever we got into the meetings between the government and ourselves going through all these details and all that minutia. Okay. And after a few months, after my manager sitting on one of the meetings, he pulled me aside and he said, "Earl, I really value the fact that you want to make sure that you know where everything is and you want everyone to know that you know everything about the project." He said, "But what I've noticed is you haven't taken time to get to know every individual in that room on a little bit more personal basis." He said, "Because I've learned a long time ago that it doesn't matter how much you know until they know how much you care." So this whole idea of here's this plan and here's what I've got to do also has to be adjusted based on the job, the environment, the surroundings. You know, we're always told, be authentic, go in and just be yourself. But I noticed one of the things, as we mentioned, that Celestina said is that be a little flexible. Is being flexible, particularly when you're moving into a new job, okay, or will that seem like you're not being authentic? Veda.
Well, I think flexibility is important if you define flexibility as the ability, as I mentioned earlier, to adapt and to pivot, particularly as circumstances change and as more information in a situation becomes available. Flexibility vis-a-vis rigidity, I think, is crucial to success in any role. So not being flexible I think there's a difference between being flexible and being so malleable that the last person that gets to you prevails in the direction you're going to go. I think that's just either being appeasing or accommodating versus being flexible that more information becomes available. We've analyzed the information as a team, and this as a unified team, we believe now with these additional facts or with this additional circumstance, believe this is the direction to go, and we're going to take this leap together.
Right. Very good. Cricket, what do you think?
I agree with that. I think that, you know, flexibility in the workplace is a good thing. It's needed, but it is not the same as what Veda said, accommodating or people-pleasing. I think that when you're flexible, you're able to deal with unexpected challenges quickly, and I think as a growing leader, that's important. When you're flexible, you can react, be proactive instead of reactive, reacting calmly and efficiently. And I think that's key. When you move into the area of leadership, flexible leaders, they can quickly modify their approach with their team in response to certain circumstances. And I think these type of leaders can they can quickly pivot to make what might be a negative circumstance and make it a really an opportunity of growth. So I think being flexible is important. But again, I like the distinction that Veda made about it is not the same thing as being completely malleable or people pleasing or all accommodating.
Right. Very good. Very good. Let's talk about her promotion to commander. Okay, her plans there was, I need to increase my leadership presence, as she calls it, and she needs to, and I really like this one, budget some time to make sure that I have time available to spend some quality moments with my team. Now, we all know how easy it is to get your plate full. And having to prioritize and having to make sure you're doing the right things. This idea of leadership presence, what do you think she meant by that, Veda, leadership presence?
Well, I think it's twofold in my mind, one of which is always projecting confidence and that you are in the role for a reason without, again, trying to impose the role or use the role as a cudgel or a bludgeon that you're going to do what I say just because I have the role. So I think the leadership presence piece is about projecting confidence. It's about making sure that people that they're under your command, particularly, again, in a law enforcement circumstance, have both the confidence and trust that you've been trained and this is the right leader for the right circumstance. And also it's almost a refinement of what we used to know as, which I think is still very current and valid, kind of the management by walking around. You learn about your team, your immediate direct reports, but also glean information from others who might have information that your leadership team may not be immediately sharing with you. Just by seeing and walking around, you learn a lot about the organization you're leading. So I always love that principle of the MBWA management walking around and believe there is a blend of both. Staying close to your immediate team, also that management by walking around can teach you a lot.
Yeah, I like that. That's good. Cricket, what about the budgeting of time piece? Is that important, and how have you done that over the years?
Oh, well, absolutely. I can remember many years ago when I was teaching full time and also decided to be a part of a direct sales job. Well, this direct sales job went off like gangbusters, and I had to really learn how to manage my time working two basically full-time jobs. The irony is when I resigned from my teaching job to go full-time into direct sales, I sort of had believed the myth, I've got plenty of time. So I wasn't prioritizing quite like I was before when I was under the gun, and I knew I only had this much time to work on things. All of a sudden I found myself grasping for time, which was ironic because here I had more time to devote to that job. So, yeah, that was a really crucial lesson that I learned, that sometimes when we are forced into a schedule, we actually get more accomplished. We can actually be more productive and less busy. I think, you know, when you're prioritizing your time and your things at work, you tend to meet deadlines because you don't sort of have in the back of your mind, oh, I've got plenty of time. And so I think that this was a really great goal at this point in her growth, in Celestine's growth. I think that this was a great thing to enable to ensure quality time with her team members. And one of the other things she said at that promotion time was to exhibit professional empathy. And the chapter made mention that became contagious. And I love that. I love that. So when you are managing your time well and you're spending your time well with your team, your influence is more important than your authority. And I think that that's key in leadership. Absolutely.
Yeah. You know, we probably have some listeners out there tonight or when they do listen to this podcast that have gone through what many of us have gone through over the past year, where you've gotten the work done, but you're in front of a computer on Zoom or Teams and that type of thing. So it's now if they're about to transition back into the office, if that happens for some or all of them, how do you think they should handle this idea of leadership presence and budgeting your time when you've been accustomed, right, to being able to get things done during the day because you know you can stay up all night and get the work done, and all they're interested in is that project meets a schedule or those tasks are done? I can imagine this idea of moving out of a COVID kind of isolation, if you will, or working not face-to-face and not being able to really get to know people or spend quality moments in that fashion. What are some of the things that you might share while we are where we are today and we have people that are in that situation relative to how do you create leadership presence and how do you really budget your time well when you're doing it virtually? Veda, what do you think?
Well, it's in some ways somewhat tantamount to the ways when we're raising our kids, they've been kind of off a regular academic schedule and homework schedule and life schedule for the summer. And then it's about maybe 3 weeks to a month before going back to the classroom. You try to get them back on a sleep schedule. You try to get them back in some kind of organizational discipline or otherwise. So hopefully more senior people try to get themselves into a rhythm and use this time that they're dealing with virtually if they now are going to be looking at going into a modified hybrid schedule where 2 or 3 days in the office and then 2 or 3 days back home, to adjust accordingly to what I believe a lot of companies are going to have to recognize, is that a lot of employees, and we've all seen these surveys, don't want to go back. In fact, I saw a survey recently that said if the choice was $30,000 in additional salary and going back into the office full time or staying at home, I guess was the choice, or $30,000 in salary to go back in full time, they would stay at home and forego the extra money. So that tells us a lot about human behavior and how people kind of perceive how they need to manage their time and what priorities they place on quality of life. So I think it's going to be a new reality for a lot of leaders and a lot of companies. the last thing I'll say before I turn it back over to you is I've consulted with a lot of companies, and there have been many employees that have started and associates that have started have not yet met their teams. And they started during this COVID 2 years and have not had any rapport with their managers or otherwise. So I would say for all those managers listening out there and others, spend your initial time with those individuals, getting them inculcated into your culture and making sure that they are getting into the groove of things, as opposed to those that may have had a longer tenure with the company.
Very good. Very good. And Cricket, I'm going to ask you to help us with a question that we just got from a listener here tonight. The question says, when you are leading and inspiring your team members, how do you keep from getting caught up in the negative company changes yet remain an authentic leader? Now, I'm going to sort of picture this in terms of the context that we're talking about at the moment, as far as, there, as Veda said, there are going to be some changes. Companies are going to be making different approaches to getting people back to work. So it's not the senior guys, but it's the people that's caught in the middle, right? That still got to keep their team members inspired and focused. Yet the company is making changes. They say the changes, well, now you got to come back in the office 3 days a week, or now you got to come back in the office full time, where they know that the team members are going to come back to them. You're the manager in the middle now. And how would you handle that? I think that's what they're asking. If they're in the middle and the company's making changes that's perceived to be negative, what's the best way to go about leading and inspiring your team in that situation?
Well, if I understand the question correctly, you mentioned something about being authentic in the midst of those changes. So,
yes.
You know, my response to that would be being an authentic leader is not faking it, right? So change is hard. It's typically difficult for, all humans, and it's because we love our comfort zone. We love consistency. We love to stick to our habits. But when changes happen, whether it's, just structural changes, company changes, changes due to COVID, whatever, I think as leaders, it's really important that we do remain authentic without sugarcoating everything, without faking it, right? I think people can tell, when we're just putting on sort of a plastic mask. I think it's really important that you stay true to who you are without wearing that mask, knowing yourself and recognizing blind spots. But I think it's also really important that you include your team in this. We want to always be professional, obviously, but I think it's really important that we include our team in this transition and in these changes, that we give them an opportunity to speak, a safe place to sort of be transparent. We can give them time to adjust the changes and, allow them the opportunity to ask questions and give feedback, and I think sort of being that middle person, like you mentioned, can be difficult, but we can still lead well in difficult times by setting the stage, by being an effective leader and do some active listening to our team and really hear them. And I think ultimately it's okay to push pause in all of that. When changes are happening and your team members are coming to you for direction, I think it's okay to say, let me get back to you on that. That, you're asking a great question. May I have some time to think about that? I think that's part of being that authentic leader in the times of change. Just simply saying, I'm here for you, but I don't have all the answers, but I will certainly do my best to find them, being courteous and professional and respectful and just staying on that growth mindset regardless of what kind of changes are happening around you.
Very good. We've sort of began to get into a topic that we probably could talk for another few days on. And I'm sure there's a lot of people out there that would appreciate it. Maybe we'll set up a special show or something to tackle. For example, if you integrate cricket in what you just said with some of the comments Veda made about some of the leaders haven't even met their team members, you know, in person to really know them, to be able to create the kind of empathy that's needed to sort of treat each one of them different and as far as how do you help them work their way through the change. And believe it or not, we are getting so close to the end of the show. And I want to make sure that we give both Cricket and Veda a chance to leave the audience with one little thought that they think will be beneficial to them, not only in terms of tonight's topic, which sort of summarizes into, you know, plan, because success happens when you leave the room, but also where we sort of ended up and some of the transitions that people are going through right now. Veda, I'm going to let you go first.
Sure. Let me just quickly say that I found, again, the chapter very interesting and Celestina's example interesting. I think both of you and Charlotte come from Phoenix, where we've all been many years, and we actually know a police chief here who actually had to leave her department and after serving it for 22 years, go be police chief Jerry Williams in Oxnard, California, and then come back as a leader in order to have a fresh perspective in order to lead. And she actually, in order to before I depart, she gave kind of three takeaways that maybe even Celestina used as she talked about her career stops as well. Jerry talked about, you know, taking outside perspective, which I just mentioned. She also talked about walking the walk, and this was in a Harvard presentation she gave about law enforcement. Again, that's about the management of walking around we talked about. She did over 500 community events as well. So as she headed the department through some very difficult changes in budget and in management, and of course, as we know, it's been a tough period for police and community relations over the last year. And lastly, leaving no one behind and being sure that you collaborate with your team for a unified vision. So I think those three lessons, again, whether you're talking about police or corporate, are very important in terms of leadership.
Outstanding. Cricket, your thoughts.
Yeah, I really enjoyed the chapter as well. And what I loved about the chapter was her plan didn't necessarily go according to what she hoped for or what she planned for. And I think that's really important, not to beat a dead horse, but I do think that that flexibility is really key. And I love that success happens when you leave the room. I love that phrase. I think what that sort of means to me is it gives us a perspective shift, right? When she ended up in California rather than Phoenix, it shifts your perspective. It gives you new exposure. And it gives you an opportunity to hit the reset button, right, to push pause, if you will. It sort of shakes up your plan and gets you out of your comfort zone and refocused. So I think just in closing that it's really important. A couple of things sort of rose to the top for me after reading this chapter when it comes to leadership growth. I think people first, absolutely. It, you know, it cannot be about you. It cannot be about your title. It cannot be about your plan. And I think Celestina did that the whole time. She had a plan, yes, but she allowed her goals and her objectives to trickle down to her team members. I think letting others win, key, you know, being able to empower others as you're reaching your own goal. And then my very favorite, and of course, as a teacher and now a leadership and life coach, always be working on your EQ. I just think that that is so important to be able to work on that that emotional quotient, to always be growing in that way, to be growing in empathy, to really listen well, and I think that those are some really, really crucial parts to leadership growth, for sure.
Very good. Well, unfortunately, those are going to have to be the last words. I'm afraid we're out of time. Charlotte, I'm going to turn it back over to you after I thank Cricket and Veda. Thanks for joining us. Outstanding job.
And let me thank our guest panel, Cricket Crockett and Veda O Manager, for joining us tonight. You both were amazing. Remember, our next episode of the 10-part Situations and Leadership series will be broadcast live Thursday night, June 17th at 8 p.m. right here at blogtalkradio.com/richerlife. Please make sure you join us for episode number 8 as we explore chapter 8 of the book Situations and Leadership. Thanks again for joining us. Be safe and remember to live.
You've been listening to Living a Richer Life with Earl and Dr. Charlotte Grant Cobb. Thank you for joining us this evening, and we'll look forward to having you back again at the same time next Thursday.